The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host, Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer and the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV. We don't cover electoral politics, which is what is on the mind of everyone in the United States this week, but we do sometimes talk about issues that relate to our coverage area, and we have a couple of excellent segments for you this week that are directly related to what we talk about on the website. First, I'm going to speak with author Shauna Berg about a piece she wrote for us regarding her career as a writer and how artificial intelligence, or AI, has affected it. And in fact, she's written a book about this subject called Poof, The Disappearance of a Writer in the Age of AI. And Shauna has a lot of really interesting and really funny insights about this situation and how it's affected her and how it's affected me and it's how it's affected anybody who is trying to make a living as a creative in this very strange time of technological advancement. So that's coming up shortly. And we're also going to talk to Sharon Vane, our frequent contributor, about the continuing saga of literary people being anti-Semitic, both online and off. There are some petitions afoot that are trying to cancel Israeli cultural institutions. Writers are pledging to no longer work with festivals and bookstores, things related to the Israeli publishing industry, because they are giving comfort to the Netanyahu government. They are aiding in what they consider to be the genocide of the Palestinian people. And whatever your opinion is about that war, this is a troubling situation because it involves canceling writers who, in many cases, have absolutely nothing to do with the tragic situation ongoing in the Middle East. But before we get to that, we're going to talk to Shauna Berg about artificial intelligence, and she will be with me after this musical interlude. We've published a lot of articles this year on the website about artificial intelligence, or AI, and how it's disrupting the publishing industry and the film industry and the TV industry. It's a topic that's not going to go away and that is going to continue to evolve as AI continues to evolve. And, you know, despite all the protections that industries are throwing up against it, it can't really stop it. It's technology, and technology has a mind of its own. And this week we published an excellent piece. Really, it's a book excerpt, for lack of a better term, a book called Poof, The Disappearance of a Writer in the Age of AI. And the author of that book is a friend of mine named Shauna Berg. She lives in Austin, Texas, and she is a writer. And Shauna is here now to talk to me about her book and about AI and how it's changed writers' lives. Hello, Shauna.
Hi, Neil. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure to talk to you. So, you know, when I first met you, I don't know how long ago it was, more than 10 years ago, you were sort of had a burgeoning career as a young adult novelist, right? I think you published 8 books. Is that right?
I wish. I have 8 that I've written, 3 published.
Oh. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's still not a bad percentage. All right. So you published 3 books, and then we sort of lost touch over the COVID years, you know, when the government mandated that we all burrow away from each other and lose touch. But you had your writing career took kind of an interesting turn. You basically like became an expert on bathtubs.
Right. Okay. So I had been writing young adult novels or middle grade novels, literary fiction, with 2 published by Random House. And then I went to write a 3rd novel, and it was going to be the memoir of an African-American person. So I was working with him and interviewing him, but I was writing it. But as time would happen and things would evolve, it became not politically correct for me, who's white and Jewish, to write that book and put my name on it, even with his name on it. It was going to be a fictionalized kind of version of his memoir at the end. That's what we came to. So the way things were evolving and the way my interests were, my first book is a historical fiction novel told from the point of view of an African-American 12-year-old girl set in 1963 and has to do with the civil rights movement. And my father was very involved with the civil rights movement in Birmingham, Alabama, and he was part of one of the first integrated law firms down there. And I had worked down in Mississippi. I had reason to write that book, but the way things were evolving in the publishing industry, you know, it really wasn't quote unquote okay for me to be writing about the topics I wanted to anymore. So I said, oh, how can I put my writing skills, you know, to use and continue to make a living? So I got a job doing content marketing and head of content for an app. And then that morphed into another job as director of content for a fintech company. And then I got laid off from that company. And I said, okay, what are some ways I can use my writing to continue to make a living? And I thought, oh, let me learn about this SEO stuff. So I took an online course from these two 30-something guys who lived in Idaho, Ricky and Jim, and they were teaching me how to create my own blog. And they said, write about your passion. And they sent me a list of 200 possible things to write about, you know, and they were like wood chopping, SUVs, hunting. And I was like, oh, I already paid for this course and there's maybe I'm not good at anything. Maybe I have no hobbies to write about. And then one night I was sitting in my bathtub, which I do every night to relax. And it occurred to me, Eureka, I am excellent at taking baths. And so that started my blog, bathtubber.com.
Right. Well, we all have to pursue our dreams. and taking a bath and writing about it is a pursuable dream. And so you had a lot of success with this site. For you were making money for a while.
Yes. I built it up, you know, over 5 years, and it got to like 110, it peaked at 110,000 monthly page views, and it was, you know, making good money.
But, and then AI reared its head. Let's get to now we're going to get to the subject at hand, right? So basically what happened was sort of the age of artificially generated content dawned.
Exactly. And so bloggers started flooding their blogs with, you know, as much content as they could possibly generate. Like before, where I would be lucky to put out three really good, high quality, well-researched posts in a week. Suddenly that wasn't enough. People were putting up 50 posts in a week, 100 posts in a week, because they were generating them with AI tools. And Google was rewarding bloggers for quote unquote, thoroughly covering their topic, whatever your topic is. So in order to cover my topic of taking baths thoroughly, suddenly I would need like hundreds and hundreds of posts. And so around the same time as this started happening, Google did what they called a quote unquote helpful content update. It was exactly September, I believe, 19th, 2023, I know, because I was dropping my son off for his freshman year at college and we had just said goodbye and I was in the hotel room packing my things up and I said, oh, let me just check my stats on Bathtubber. Let me see the analytics. And it was just a cliff, you know, like a complete nosedive in traffic. So I thought, oh, the server's down. That's happened before. I'll deal with it when I get home. But it turned out that this unhelpful, helpful content update like really obliterated tons of small blogs, including mine, and most of them have not come back.
And I'm wondering, how did it obliterate them? Because I mean, you were still producing content, and people were didn't you have readers who would go to the site, or were you completely dependent on SEO?
I was mostly dependent on SEO. It was like someone would be searching up like a burning question, like, "Can I use Vicks in the bathtub?" and then they find my information. But in the helpful content update, suddenly huge brands were rewarded, and their results and information, and especially stores. If you had a brick and mortar store, you would surface higher in the results, like Lowe's or, you know, Target.
So really, in a lot of ways, this change in AI, because AI is really like a war on, because you're essentially a small business person when you're doing an independently produced blog like yours. You know, this is like a war on small business, because writers, as we both well know, are the smallest of small business people.
Right. And Google suddenly didn't consider anyone who wasn't selling an actual physical product as a legitimate small business.
Right. All right. So that was a year ago, essentially, as we're talking. How have you fought back against this? I mean, your website, are you still doing your website? Are you doing, have you changed the way you approach it? Are you doing other things?
Well, at the same time as I was doing Bathtubber, I also had content clients who I would do content marketing pieces for their blogs and their newsletters, and help them come up with their own content strategies. So just as I was hit, some of them, because they actually had physical services that they provided in a local area, they did okay. However, what I write about in Poof is that one of my clients, she is one of the top 10 time management experts in the world. So of course, when AI came out, her name is Maura Thomas. When AI came out, of course, she wanted to embrace it. And so she said to me, hey, you know, in the next year, we're going to try to automate and as much as we can. So I want you to start using this technology. And I thought, like, wait a minute. Is this like the last vestige of my juicy writing life, you know, shriveling up like a dead leaf and falling to the floor? And I said, like, I screamed. We were on a Zoom call and I just screamed, like, I hate AI. And then she called me for an in-person meeting. We met at Snooze and she was like, look, you can't be clinging to your ink pot and quill. You know, you got to get with the times. So since then, I have taken it upon myself. Like, I have gone through this whole metamorphosis. And I thought, like, on the one hand, there's this quote I love by Jeffrey Hinton, who was called the father of deep learning, who said, just last year, he said, my intuition is we're toast. This is actually the end of history. Okay. And so, like, my gut is with him, but at the same time, I'm really trying to learn as much about as AI as I can. I'm taking lots of AI and digital marketing courses, and I'm learning how to use it, not for the writing part of the work that I do for clients, but for more of the analytics and the strategy part.
I think that's, you know, that's just smart business, you know, for someone like me and for our site. Like, I'm kind of clinging to the ink pot and quill, not because I think that it's necessarily a good business strategy or a good marketing strategy for myself, but because, like, what I have to offer, and I think what this website has to offer, is, you know, an idiosyncratic way of looking at the world, right? And maybe that's naive, but I feel like, you know, AI is fantastic for generating content, and it's getting better and better at it all the time. And AI written articles sound and feel like people are writing them, but I still, you know, have, to my mind, at least a semi-unique consciousness. And, you know, and I feel like you must feel the same way, or why else would you have written a book?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I love writing. You know, you can't take it away from me. That's what I do. And that's why I was getting so sad and depressed, as everyone's, you know, pressing a button to generate their content. And so what I realized through the process of writing the book, and what I think is so awesome about the Book and Film Globe website, is that it's original. Like, no one can take away our original points of view and our original human experiences. And we have to do it. We have to keep writing for our own souls, right? If we stop, that's kind of the end for us creative types. We have to keep creating, even if no one cares.
Yeah, keep creating and keep thinking independently, even if the machines are thinking smarter and faster and better than we are. We're still humans, and you know, creativity is what distinguishes us from other species and from the machines. So let's wrap up. Let's tell people where they can buy your memoir. And you know, I'm sure there are a lot of people out there who can relate to your experience. Where can you pick it up? You have published it yourself without the help of, well, we've obviously used technology, but you wrote it yourself also.
Yes. It's available at bookshop.org, Amazon, barnesandnoble.com, online, and it's available in the ebook version and paperback.
I, you know, personally recommend bookshop.org because that, if you buy it at bookshop.org, you can choose the bookhouse in Millburn or Long Branch, New Jersey, which are the bookstores owned by our parent company. And you could, they'll throw a little bit of money, toward that. And so it'll all come full circle. So, you know, here at Book and Film Globe, we still believe in independent publishing and independent bookstores. And, Shauna Berg, thank you so much for, adapting to the world we live in, but also for continuing to carry the torch for Gen X, the last generation that knew what it meant to think for ourselves.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Every time I think that the situation in publishing can't get worse for Jewish writers, the publishing industry surprises me and comes up with something even more extreme and ridiculous. Our latest thing that we've covered on the website has been a letter, an open letter. Why are we always talking about open letters? I'd like writers to stop writing letters. I know that's a lot, but an open letter that is calling for a boycott of Israeli cultural institutions that are, quote, complicit in genocide against the Palestinian people. Sharon Vain is our frequent contributor. I wrote about this topic this week, but Sharon is always a smart and reliable commentator on publishing industry related things and on Jewish related issues as well. And she is here today to talk to me, complain really, kvetch about this situation. Hello, Sharon.
Hello. Well, I think there's a lot of commiseration to be had because, as you say, this is yet another in a long line of incidents in which anything and everything to do with Israel is demonized. And this is what this open letter does.
Right. Well, and this one is significant to me because they're not calling for a boycott of a publisher who, let's say, put out a Benjamin Netanyahu memoir, just condemning the Netanyahu government. They're talking about Israeli literary festivals and other related institutions. And you and I have talked about this a lot on the show, right? A lot of the times when these things come up, these are like bookstore employees or like kind of relatively unknown young adult authors or people who like are, you know, working on blogs or literary festivals, which isn't to demean those positions, but these aren't major, figures. But this letter is signed off on by a lot of major literary figures, including several Booker Prize nominees this year.
Yes. Well, it's disturbing that writers of such, general renown within the industry, and, you know, there's a few bold-faced names on this list, Sally Rooney being one, who has, you know, long spoken out against the war in the Middle East, which is fine. You can speak out against the war in the Middle East. But when you're writing this overbroad letter that says anybody that has anything to do with an Israeli cultural institution or a literary festival, unless, you know, as best I can understand it, unless you say, I hate what Israel's doing and I'm all in for Palestine, you should not do business with, these folks, according to the people who signed the letter. There's no specificity. There's no nuance. It's just another example of when there's one perspective that is acceptable in this debate. And it is that there is nothing connected with Israel or Israeli people that is acceptable to interact with, to have a conversation with, to debate, or to take part in, which is remarkably lacking nuance for people that are supposed to traffic in nuance and explain the human condition.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, let's be clear. This letter has not been published yet. It was leaked to the Times of London. I think someone saw what was going on and they were alarmed by it. I'm going to quote from to me what was the key part of this letter. Quote, "Culture has played an integral role in normalizing these injustices. Israeli cultural institutions, often working directly with the state, have been crucial in obfuscating, disguising, and art washing the dispossession and oppression of millions of Palestinians for decades." Art washing. That to me, that's just like saying art doesn't matter. Your art, by writing a novel, what do they even mean, art washing?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. Like, when I hear art washing, I think, oh, you're secretly a tool of the Israeli government and you're humanizing the regular Israelis or any Israelis. I mean, I guess that's what it means. But are we not allowed to write about Israelis doing things, just living their lives? I mean, every Israeli cultural, you know, contribution is not about war or about strife or about land. I mean, interestingly enough, Israelis love each other. They fight with each other. They have arguments over bar mitzvahs. I mean, there's a lot of...
And they're not all Jewish. Like, on top of that.
Correct.
On top of that. Well, and here's the thing, too. Here's the thing, too. If you're a government, and you are not, and either am I, if you're looking to, quote unquote, wash the sins of whatever your sins are, you're not going to go through literature, which is at best these days like a fringe cultural product. You know, it's like saying they're using opera to brainwash people. You know, you're going to go through, you know, the internet and through television. You're not going to be trying to brainwash people through literary festivals. So this whole thing is just, it's just kind of despicable. I'm going to name some other names here. Arundhati Roy, who is a Indian novelist, a longstanding voice of the left. And if she is signing your letter, you know, you're kind of already kind of veering into very left-wing territory. Also, Percival Everett, who wrote this year's very Booker-nominated novel, James, and also wrote, which is a retelling of Huckleberry Finn from the point of view of the Jim character. And he also wrote American Fiction, which was an Oscar, which an Oscar-nominated film last year was based on. And also the Nobel laureate Abdul Razak Gurna, who I believe is from Tanzania. We've covered him. We covered his prize on the site. And then Rachel Kushner, who has written several, he was Jewish and American and has written several novels and has a Booker Prize nominated novel this year, which we've also reviewed on the site this week. So, you know, it's just kind of disturbing to me that people who are so high up in the industry, and again, this is the literary industry. These are not, you know, major world figures, but it's just disturbing to me. And that, you know, Kushner is Jewish. What are you doing? What are you doing signing this letter? I'm sorry. I don't care if you think this war is wrong.
Well, I think we often, and I'm not saying that Rachel Kushner is this person, but I think we have often seen in the debate a lot of attention paid to the Jewish folks who speak out against, you know, what's going on in the Middle East. And, you know, we, as you say, you know, we might be able to all agree we don't like the way Netanyahu is running this war. We lament the loss of lives on both sides. And, you know, all of those kinds of stipulations that, you know, people often make in these conversations. I think the question here is it appropriate to essentially, it's like a silencing, it's an erasure. It's you know, are you a good Jew where like you're with us and you denounce Israel, you denounce any its right to exist, you put Israeli in quotes. You know, all of those little signifiers that, you know, this comes after, as you mentioned, you know, there have been a couple of bookstore events that have been disrupted because, you know, an author was Jewish and, you know, we're not going to have Zionists on stage here. This has come after, you know, we also covered another panelist at a literary festival whose panel got canceled because the other two authors refused to appear on a panel with someone who was a Zionist, even though the panel...
A quote-unquote Zionist, you know.
Right. I mean, Zionist is a slur now.
Yeah.
You know, Zionist is a slur. And we're, no matter how many times you say to people, well, for me, you know, Zionism means that Israel has a right to exist. We're the only group that doesn't get to define our own terms. Other people define our terms for it.
Exactly. I mean, and you know, again, there's always a ray of hope in these things. There have been a lot of people speaking out against this boycott, including Lee Child, who is the creator of the Jack Reacher character, who is, as I put in my piece, sold more books in a month than Rachel Kushner will in a lifetime. He's Jewish, and he called the proposal nuts, even though he says he's for a two-state solution. And I don't honestly even know what that means or if I'm for it or not. You know, the fact is that there is a way to say I don't like the Israeli government's response to the October 7th, 2023 attacks without calling for a boycott of Israeli cultural institutions, which is just several bridges too far. I have someone forwarded me a letter, Sharon, from a counter letter. As far as the only people they've touted who have signed it have been like Mayim Bialik, who was a TV star and also briefly the host of Jeopardy. And she's spoken out in favor of Israel. And also Brett Gelman, who is an actor and a memoirist who's had events canceled because of his support for Israel. I'm not allowed to quote directly from that letter because, again, it has not been published yet. But they kind of compare to what's going on now to a 1933 Nazi boycott of Jewish authors, which led to massive book burnings. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not so sure that that's a direct comparison because it's not like the Biden administration is calling for a boycott of Jewish cultural institutions or any other national government or the Israeli government or any government. No government's going to do that. So, but what is disturbing to me is that you don't need the governments to do it when you have so many writers who are willing to speak out against Jews. And I know that there should be a distinction between Jews and Israel, but I think in a lot of people's minds there isn't, right?
Well, I think we keep hearing from those who have been speaking out against the war that, you know, criticizing the Israeli government is not anti-Jewish, which I agree with that statement. However, when we see, we're talking about the literary world here, but it's impossible not to look around at the context we find this latest development in, where things like Hillel's on college campuses, which is where, you know, Jewish students go to have bagels and Shabbat dinner, when that gets targeted, when, you know, you're protesting outside synagogues, as has happened here in our hometown of Austin, when you're targeting all Jewish institutions, but you're saying there's no connection, it does tend to make you wonder and ask questions. And I'm glad to know that counter letter is out there, because at minimum, we do not have to stand silent and participate in our own erasure. I'm glad the group is speaking out.
I will say the counter letter, it looks to me from the early signatories that I saw, it's a lot of entertainment industry figures, you know, people who are Jews, probably liberal Jews, but who aren't necessarily like, you know, people of the left, you know, sort of, regular liberal Hollywood Jews. There's been a lot of sort of pushback on that regard. I have not seen the names of any prominent writers, but maybe people who are prominent writers aren't as prominent as we think. And I know that my own interest in reading certain people's work has gone down tremendously since I have seen what they're signing up for. I mean, I'll take a shot at whatever, but you know, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking like, maybe they don't like the Jews so much. I hate to say it.
I'm with you there. Amen to that.
All right, Sharon Vane, I will talk to you. Someday we're going to talk about something happy, I swear to God.
That's right. One day.
Next year in Jerusalem. All right, bye-bye, Sharon.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Sharon Vane. A little update to the conversation that Sharon and I had last week. Since she and I talked, the head of PEN America, Suzanne Nossel, has stepped down from her position after a year of how shall I put it, protests or pressure from a group called Writers Against the Occupation, many of whom are also signatories to the letter that Sharon and I talked about. PEN America is a major literary organization, and Nossel simply refused to turn against the state of Israel and now has moved on to being the head of something called Freedom House. But regardless, what does removing Suzanne Nossel from her job have to do with the war in Israel? Not much. So let's stop canceling people over this. This is just so petty. It's so silly. Just stop. You're not going to change situations by getting rid of heads of literary organizations or by canceling book readings or by boycotting bookstores. It's just ridiculous. And we're going to continue to speak out about that on Book and Film Globe. Also, thank you to Shauna Berg for talking to us about her book, Poof, The Disappearance of a Writer in the Age of AI, and about the effect that AI is having on the publishing industry and on writers' careers. But it's not having much of an effect on Book and Film Globe yet, unless you count us publishing lots of great articles about the effect it's having on the publishing industry and on writers. We're covering that. We cover everything. I'm a real person. I'm not a computer. I'm not a simulation. This is reality. At least I think it is. It depends, really, on where we're at this time next week. But remember, regardless of whoever is the president-elect when you're listening to this, there will still be television to watch. I can 100% guarantee you that television is never going to go away. Movies will, they may go away. Movies and books may take different forms, but there will always be content to discuss. And I will always be Neil Pollack. I will always be the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. Thanks so much for reading the site and to listening to the show. And I will talk to you soon.
Original production. The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at the Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's the Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.